Hi, everyone. I'm Amna Nawaz, national correspondent at the PBS NewsHour. Before tonight's show starts, I wanted to highlight our latest original podcast series, Broken Justice. It's about the fundamental right we all have to a lawyer, even if we can't afford one, and how the public defender system, meant to protect us, allowed one man to be sentenced to life in prison for a crime he says he didn't commit. Broken Justice is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
A milestone week in Washington. The impeachment proceedings against President Trump advanced to the House Judiciary Committee as Speaker Nancy Pelosi directed House Chairman to begin drafting articles of impeachment. And while facing impeachment back home, President Trump faced NATO allies in London as the Democratic primary field shrank again. Here to help us make sense of it all are Shields and Brooks, that is syndicated columnist Mark Shields and New York Times columnist David Brooks. Okay, shrunk.
Okay. We're shrinking right in front of you.
we're moving ahead. Let's start with impeachment, Mark. Quite a week, the speaker did say, I want you to begin drafting articles. Judiciary Committee held hearings with constitutional scholars, experts on Wednesday. Where does this argument stand right now that the president should be impeached?
I think the argument is quite straightforward, that the president illicitly used his power in violation of his oath of office to enlist, maybe subvert another country to participate in and sabotage an American election upcoming, not 2016, as we're going to be revisiting that. He's talking about the election of 2020. And I think, I think that's it. It's clear, straightforward, in violation of not only his oath, but of the express position, will, and law of the United States Congress. I think it's pretty clear.
Where does it clear to you?
Yeah, it takes two to have an argument, and we don't seem to have an argument because we have one side of the Democrats who are happy to talk about it, and the White House doesn't seem very interested in confronting that argument with another side.
That's true.
And so that's what their decision in the House. I wonder what they're going to do in the Senate. Is the White House going to mount a defense? Are they going to leave it to Republican senators? But I think that I agree with Mark. The evidence is just pretty overwhelming.
So you have mentioned the Judiciary Committee had its hearings this week. They heard from scholars, Mark. Monday they're going to have what they call an evidence hearing. Is either side, I mean, both of you are saying the White House isn't presenting a defense, but some of the Republicans on the committee are saying this whole thing is a sham. I mean, how much headway are the Republicans making with that argument that they keep hammering at?
Well, I mean, the Republicans have been united. I mean, so I don't know if there's headway to make in the nation. I mean, their position is pretty clear. They're going to stick with the president regardless. I mean, it's kind of fascinating to me. There's a little vignette, I think, that it sort of encompasses and explains this whole thing. In the 2018 election, in the 11th District of New Jersey, there was a Republican seat, been held for 25 years. The Democrats nominated a rather remarkable candidate, a Naval Academy graduate, a mother of four, who had been a helicopter pilot and a federal prosecutor. And Nancy Pelosi supported her. But before the election, Mikey Sherrill, the Democrat, called Nancy Pelosi and said, I'm getting an awful lot of criticism. I'm going to have to announce I will not support you as for speaker if I do win. And Nancy Pelosi said, oh, Mikey, forget about it. Go win. That's what matters. All right? That same election in Utah, Mayor Love, the only black Republican woman in the Congress, right, in a district that was incredibly fought, 294,000 votes cast, she lost by 1/3 of 1%. And Donald Trump, in his first press conference after the election, said, Mayor Love didn't show me any love, and she lost. I mean, that just sort of encapsulates where we are, I think, on the two combatants. And it is. It's Pelosi against Trump. Let's be very blunt about it. I mean, you talk about the chairman and all the rest of it, but it is Pelosi against Trump.
And Trump had an argument of a sort today, which was 256,000 new jobs.
Yes.
And so the economy is a big factor here. And so as long as he has that economy, the Republicans will be sticking with him. The whole atmosphere around him will be good from the Republican point of view. I should say, I thought Nancy Pelosi had one of the best political moments of the year this week in saying that she doesn't hate Donald Trump. She's going to pray for Donald Trump.
That's right.
That was, I just thought, a beautiful moment of well, she said it's her Catholic faith of Christian witness.
So I hear that.
David,
go
David,
ahead.
David is a devotee of St. Augustine, and she was quoting, of course, St. Augustine would, you know, hate the sin, but not the sinner.
Not the sinner. Yeah. So do I hear both of you saying you think the Democrats are correct to be moving forward with this impeachment, that this is a wise move on their part?
I don't know if it's wise. I think they feel it's an imperative move. I mean, that if they don't do it, they will never be again be able to face themselves in the mirror or look at history's judgment, that they watched a president do this. They saw a president do this openly and clearly and did not act. I mean, that is just simply saying it's abdicating all power. It's changing our system.
Yeah. And I think Pelosi understands two contradictory facts. One, they have to do this
yep.
for constitutional reasons. And two, it could hurt some swing voters, but it's not the conversation she wants to have, which mm-hmm. is about health care and other things.
That's right.
So they're doing the right thing, which is to do it and do it as fast as they possibly can. I'm sort of struck by what Mitch McConnell, how he'll react in the Senate. Does he want to drag this out as a way to keep Democrats, Senate candidates in there? Or does he want to get it out of the way? Maybe if I were him, I'd probably want to get it out of the way, too.
A lot of questions. So meantime this week, while all this is going on in Washington, the president is in London meeting with NATO leaders. And Mark, once again, the president manages to get into a squabble with his counterparts. Is this something that you think is having a bigger effect on the United States, or is this something that is limited? There was a video of the other leaders apparently mocking President Trump. Is this something that's just about him, or is this affecting the United States?
Well, Judy, I went back and checked the record. It was the first time that Donald Trump, at least publicly I could find, 1987, took a full-page ad in the New York Times saying that Japan was having its freighters sail through the Persian Gulf, protected by the Americans, and they ought to pay for it. Otherwise, the world would be laughing at us. And OPEC would be laughing at us. And he said China would be laughing at us. Russia would be laughing at us. Iran was laughing at us. And this was a constant theme throughout his campaign, you know, that the world's laughing at us. And, you know, I was unaware of the world laughing at us. I'll be very honest with you. But I saw evidence of the world laughing at the president of the United States. I mean, the leaders of the free world laughing at him and what had been his egotism and egocentricity just run rampant at the indifference of anybody else. So that's what struck me about that vignette you described.
Is that about him or is it about the country?
It's about him. My Twitter feed was interesting that day when the video came out, because the left side of my Twitter feed was saying, this is terrible, everyone's laughing at, and Donald Trump can't get along with foreign leaders. And the right side of my Twitter feed was saying, this is awesome, Donald Trump can't get along with foreign leaders. So they liked the idea that he was having a fight. And I will say, from the right side of the Twitter sphere or of the universe, mockery is a sign of higher status to people they think are less intelligent or less good. And so a lot of people who feel that everyone's looking down on them see mockery as sort of an elite phenomenon toward them. And it's read very differently, in my experience, in different parts of the country. And so I do think this was an example of how we see the world differently. I do think it's indisputable that Donald Trump is hurting our relationships with our allies. I mean, that's indisputable. I once had a friend who was in the State Department say, most of what we do here is not foreign policy, it's foreign relations. Mm-hmm. We do relationships. And as Mark can tell you, in politics, and as in life, relationship is 98% of the game. And if you're torching your relationships with your allies, then they're not going to be there when you need them.
That's a good point.
So meantime, there still are a dozen and a half Democrats running for president. And this week, actually, there's one fewer this week. Kamala mm-hmm. Harris, mm-hmm. Senator from California, dropped out. Mark, we saw an interesting exchange between Joe Biden and a voter yesterday, where Joe Biden looked like he got pretty angry. How is the race shaped up at this point, given a number of candidates have now dropped out?
Well, I mean, the Kamala Harris thing, padded, why not a first term African-American senator running for the presidency? Barack Obama did it. Two major differences. Barack Obama was a once in a lifetime political talent. And secondly, he was the only anti-war candidate in an anti-war party. Everybody else had supported the Iraq War. a lack of core convictions. She was for single-payer health insurance until she was against it. And she got caught in the changing mores. I mean, a woman who'd been a district attorney and an AG was a real plus, kind of proving her toughness. But all of a sudden, in this Democratic Party and changing values, the question became, what about prisoners' rights and so forth? I think the pre-mortems on her campaign in both Politico and the New York Times and the Washington Post on the internal strife
talked about that last week. But the Democrats are left with a less, shall we say, colorful, fewer people of color.
Race. And, I think as a number of people have said, identity politics plays well on Twitter, not in campaigns. Mm-hmm. And Beto O'Rourke and Kamala Harris were the two most identity politics candidates. I also think it's just indisputably true this year that being an African American is a disadvantage, not because Democrats are voters, but because Democrats think other people are racist, and that they won't vote, I think, for an African American. And not the whole explanation, a piece of the explanation for why Cory Booker, who I think has run a very good campaign, has not done better, and why she has not done better. And they're left with this white, an all-white debate stage.
And among those left in the race, we mentioned Joe Biden getting into the squabble with a voter this week, but Joe Biden was endorsed by John Kerry, former Secretary of State this week. He was, of course, the nominee one not so long ago himself. And then you had three Obama administration officials endorsing Pete Buttigieg. Mm-hmm. What about these endorsements?
Well, I mean, the John Kerry is not unimportant. I don't think endorsements mean a lot more on the back of a check than they do in a political campaign, unless it's the spouse of one candidate endorsing that candidate's opponent, generally speaking. But John Kerry did win Iowa. He was the nominee. He was the Secretary of State. Certainly one of the central themes of Joe Biden's campaign is that the world is in disarray, as we've just been talking about, and it's going to take an awful lot of effort and expertise from day one to reassemble it. And I think the New Hampshire, and it's a little bit of a slap at Elizabeth Warren at the same time.
Kerry endorsing.
Yeah, Deval Patrick.
I think the Obama officials are endorsing Buttigieg is a bigger deal, just because he needs the credibility. Oh, can a 37-year-old do this? And that sort of lends some credibility to him. But I do think Biden had one of the best weeks of the campaign. He had an ad mocking President Trump, wishful thinking. And then he went after that voter, which I think showed vigor, showed toughness, showed he's doing well. And I think also allowed him to control the news cycle, which he hasn't done for a long time.
Disagree. I disagree with David. I think that Joe Biden can take on a voter, but he looked, you want to do push-ups, you want to run, you want to take an IQ test. It looked a little bit like mini Trump, and that isn't where Joe Biden's going to win this campaign if he's going to win it.
Mark Shields, David Brooks, thank you.